Let's do some introductions. Start with myself, Mark Molnar, Council Staff. Over to you, Stephen.
Good afternoon, Stephen Spano, AIDS Legal Referral Panel.
Laura.
Laura Thomas, she, her, council member.
TJ.
TJ Lee Miyake, Council Member.
Lee.
I'll lead your council member.
Kat.
Kat Tajgir, council staff.
Nikos.
Hi, Nikos, they, them pronouns, council member.
Beth.
Hi, Beth Neary, sub-DPH, HIV Health Services staff member.
And Derek.
Hi, Derek Mapp, council member.
Great. Well, welcome everyone. Even though we can't approve the agenda without quorum, if we can throw that agenda up, take a look at what we have in store for us today. Right, we have our normal items, 1 through 5, also our regular returning HCAP report. Get an update from, I guess, me and Kat on youth assessment and COLA, and that will be it. Any changes or updates to this here agenda? No? All right. Well, we can save the minutes for if we achieve quorum and go right to announcements. Any announcements? No? Right. I think all of you except for, oh, Beth, you have an announcement?
Well, you may have already sent this announcement out, but in HIV Health Services, we've received all of our funding notices for the Ryan White Part A, C, B, we already had, and EAG. So we have our full year awards now, and they're pretty, you know, someone down, someone up, but they're pretty consistent with what we would expect. Nothing terrible came out of.
Yeah, my understanding of the reductions were fairly, I wouldn't say minimal, but we're not something that puts us into a unusual place. All right. And of course, I think all of you, except maybe Laura, were at the last council meeting, I'm sure you've seen from our email shared from Kat that we did lose a council member who passed, Gwen Smith.
Yeah,
all right.
Thank you.
All right, any other announcements? All right, there's no public. Does anyone like to speak on as public? I'm just taking that hat on. Okay, then over to you, Stephen, for your HCAP monthly report.
Thank you. First, I want to apologize. There's one mistake at the very top of this report. Instead of long-term care facility, that should be skilled nursing facility. I wanted to raise this. It's a new case. I am working on it currently. I did want to raise because it appears as though the definition the definitions that Medi-Cal is using for eligibility appear to be changing. I haven't received those eligibility requirements yet. I'm still working with the ombudsman to get that that information, but they are becoming more stringent, and I think that's a matter to be discussed by the community engagement committee, because as folks age, you know, this is a skilled nursing facility is a very valuable resource. If folks can't access those services and they need a significant level of care, there really isn't a step down for in-home support for folks. And so I am concerned about the, you know, that definition changing. Like I said, it's kind of progressing as we go. So I'll keep you all posted on that. I also, the top two cases, I'm not sure why my system did not translate my notes into the right spot. So I apologize, but on the first closed case 2025-31, I did receive those records. So that case is closed out. The client has access to those records. In this, the second one, 2025-36, that is also resolved although it doesn't read in the action note there. In this instance, when we discussed the client's incident, it was very far in the past, and so any statute of limitations had run. Now that wouldn't necessarily preclude us from filing a grievance, but the client declined to file a grievance at this time. So that case is closed out. I wanted to share just a couple of successes. There were two incidents, one of which we talked about last month, of clients who were terminated from care from their dental services provider. The dental service provider has accepted both of them back into the program. If you'll recall, one of them required just a little bit of additional wraparound support. We were trying to figure out because they were having some kind of reflexive issues that were posing a dangerous situation for the provider. It wasn't the client's intention at all, but they would move and kind of swing their arm, and not a very safe thing to do for a dental provider who's holding sharp instruments in, when the client can't control themselves. And so they did obtain some wraparound support from their primary care provider, who prescribed some sedatives for the client, and now they're moving forward. They're engaged in dental services. And the other one was actually reconnected as well, and the service provider actually even went through great lengths to make sure that they could obtain emergency services. So I think I am still working with that client on some other issues, but the fact that they're connected to dental services is really awesome. One other quick success, 2025-07. This is a success story for me. This client has been, I've been supporting the client for a very long time. Actually, he was on my predecessor's exit memo when I started. And so he's still working with this substance use, a residential substance use facility, but he's been progressing really well and doing really great in the program, and trying to move toward independent living. He's employed, and I'm just really proud to see the progress that he's made over the last 5, 6 years. And so we're going to support if he decides to move out into independent living, we'll support with a lease review or anything that he needs, and try to get him access to a shallow subsidy. I don't really have too much of anything outstanding cases or too many notable cases other than that, but I will make myself available if anybody has any questions about those or others.
Hi, Stephen. Sorry. I was wondering, for the first case that you presented, do you feel that there's might be a need or an in-service around hospice care and the changes that are happening around that? I sort of agree with you around this is going to be part of the changing environment. A little bit of that's going to feel similar to the early days. But is very different because this is around, this will be more centered around aging concerns and the process of integrating HIV as well as aging or LGBT concerns in this sort of system, I think is still rather new and fresh. What do you think?
Yeah, well, so one point of clarification, it's not a hospice facility. This is a skilled nursing
I'm
facility.
sorry. Yes, I'm sorry. Exactly that. Sorry.
I'm not sure what type of in-service would be helpful other than to really understand the qualifications, the eligibility requirements that Medi-Cal is resting on for that type of that level of care. I mean, it is a very high level of care, right? And they take a significant percentage of clients' income in order to keep them, in that facility, of which there's really only one. So, well, one funded by DPH. Other than really understanding those eligibility requirements, I'm not sure what benefit an in-service would have. I mean, I can, certainly a better understanding for the council, If they want to be able to advocate for themselves and the community. It's not merely a level, it's not merely aging that would put somebody there.
Right.
A little bit more about this client might be helpful to give you a more, maybe a better picture. This client, I thought that they had no use of their legs. When I met with them, they have no use of their legs. They can't walk. They do require a surgery that can potentially resolve that issue for them, but it also requires a significant amount of post-op support and physical therapy. What I didn't know is the client is also missing an arm. She has only one, so she's only working with one limb right now. She can't bathe herself. She can't clothe herself. She can't use the bathroom. She needs to be put in her bed in order to use the bathroom with a bedpan. So, but what I'm learning is it is not merely ADLs that makes somebody, a lack of being able to, to meet your activities of daily living is not the threshold. The threshold is a level of medical necessity. So it's not, although certainly there could be some attendant illnesses that would, require a high level of medical care. It's not aging alone that would make somebody eligible to get into that facility.
So
So, yeah.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, that's okay. Yeah, that was pretty much it.
Well, I hear what you're saying. I think I'm just thinking in terms of initial salvos into this entire world, because obviously even as we are aging with HIV, many of us it is never just an aging issue. Many of us come with multiple other health challenges, including mobility issues, that may be associated with aging or may be the result of HIV, lifetime of HIV, or lifetime of taking HIV medication, or its concomitant side effect profiles. So I get that actually, in terms of the challenges that this lady is having, right? And I guess I keep on. I think about what you were just saying in terms of there's no step down between services, and I remember there was a much more robust system. In the early days, when there was a lot of money, of course, being thrown at HIV, that has
There's a
now
lot,
thinned considerably.
and the fact, and it seems at least, and I wasn't there, far better, but at least from what I understand from, the folks who have been around is, the level, that level of care did not need to be sustained for as long
Right.
in a lot of instances, right?
Right. But opening that salvo in terms of understanding what may be coming at us and how we may start thinking about what's needed practically and how we might start developing policy process. It can't come at us all at one dump as we wake
Yeah.
up. So we might as well start our education somewhere,
Most certainly.
is
I
what I'm
definitely
thinking
agree.
more.
Oh, I'm sorry to interrupt you. I no,
No.
I absolutely agree. I can jump back on the soapbox. I've been kind of advocating for in-home support for folks for as for the last several years, ever since I had a client who was denied in-home services and I couldn't get them back, and that case still weighs on me. I have not heard from that client. I don't know where they are. And so, that's somebody, again, it was another instance where somebody, they were relatively healthy apart from being quadriplegic and, and having HIV, but they were otherwise very healthy and young. It was just, there was nobody to provide the level of support that that person needed in her home, So I just, I'm I will remain on that soapbox and advocate for additional in-home support. And I think there has been, there has been the reintroduction of the Medi-Cal waiver program, formerly the AIDS waiver program, and that there is a provider that I've done outreach with and met with and I've referred to. I'm not sure where they're at. I don't know what's going on with their funding.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, I think it's a, as we continue down whatever journey we're on with this current state of affairs, we need to maintain that that's true. Folks are going to need in-home support, and it's got to be, I don't know the exact numbers, but it's got to be less expensive than putting somebody in a long-term care facility. So like
Absolutely.
Yep.
And I just know that Shanti and these other groups out there have the sort of volunteer services, but one of the things that we can't do is sort of medicalized volunteer support. And this is going to be a costly process, but we really need to start thinking about these sort of things. So thank you, Stephen. But I think one of the other things that I was thinking about, and that was the second case or the last piece you were talking about, and it's much more of a comment, and that is it sounds like a wonderful success story for someone who has been trying to develop a life for themselves that's healthier for themselves for quite a while. And it would be really nice if, as he's making this transition into more independent care, like, and you talked about again that there's some overlap where they can continue to have the level of support that's needed as they're regaining their independence, so they're just not flying out in the wind after acquiring this, wonderful life and support that they now have. I
Yeah.
don't know if I'm making any sense. I'm sorry.
No, I mean, I'm as proud of that person as anyone could be. I'm really happy to see how they've been doing.
So it'd be really great to see what sort of connections that they can make or can be developed for them as a continuance plan.
Yeah.
Any other questions or
I did
comments
see
for
that
Stephen?
Nico's hand was up, but it looks like they put them down.
Yeah, I'm having like hella tech issues. I apologize. But I just was gonna, I guess, like echo that, and maybe this is not the right time or place to talk about this, but I've had a lot of issues with IHSS services. And so like I do, yeah, I would love to like explore this topic more, I guess, with folks, because it really does feel like a gap in services coverage for people in like a very critical time.
It has been the topic of conversation on some of the HCAHPS reports. I don't currently have any cases with, that involve in-home supportive services. What I can say is that I have been collaborating with John Frockschwig at the AIDS Foundation. He and I have had multiple meetings with HHS, the other HHS, Health and Human Services, to discuss that. I've learned a lot about it's not an HIV service provider, so I feel okay sharing the name of the one provider that there is, which is Homebridge. But one of the challenges has been, when a client is deemed to be beyond the scope of whatever Homebridge can support on, there is no other option, right? They either have to have somebody, or they have to go through the public authority in order to obtain, a list. And for somebody who is incredibly disabled, scheduling and finding out, trying to figure out and do interviews and all of that is an incredibly onerous process, right? If you don't have somebody in your life that you can already name as your caretaker. And so I did learn that there is some support available. If we're ever working with a client who requires additional support from IHSS or is having trouble finding a provider or can't locate a provider, you can make that referral to me. One thing that I didn't realize is that San Francisco is the only county in California that operates under what they call the contract mode. And contract mode is that contract that they have with Homebridge. For all of the problems that we may need to navigate with that system, we're the only ones that have it. So it's actually quite a valuable resource despite the challenges that it might experience. So, I've grown to just see from an additional perspective. Just a more complete perspective. But that doesn't mean that I won't always advocate that they should be a provider of last resort, because they are. But it gives me a little bit of insight into some of the challenges that they face. And I was also made aware, I learned through that those conversations, that there were some determinations made about how they set that up that were kind of going like trial and error style. So there is opportunity for advocacy and moving forward, and they're open to that. They're open to hearing feedback. So it's hard for me to stay really in the mix on stuff like that when I'm dealing on the front line in this the way that I am, but I can always revisit that and jump back in and work with HHS a little bit more to get some stuff done. So feel free to it's not quite an HCAP thing, unless it's connected with an HCAP issue, which oftentimes it is. So, but we can always diagnose it and find some way to support.
That is a tricky one, of course. It's not a Ryan-funded service category, although many of our clients are using that particular service. So we don't have,
Rely on it.
yeah, exactly. They absolutely rely on it, and it's true that that it's great that there is some accountability based on this contractual relationship. But it's also true that like there's so many issues, right, around wait time, around the interview process for folks, as far as like even the number of people they have on deck due to the low wages that they're paid. Like it's a host of problems that we actually can't I guess address based on our mandate, but certainly something that we should always be aware of via Stephen, how it impacts many of our clients' lives. But yeah, we're in a tricky spot. All right, any other questions or comments for Stephen? No, thank you, Stephen. All right, we'll move
Thank
on
you.
to needs assessment and COLA update. We have update for both. For a needs assessment, which of course is targeting folks who are age 65 and older, we are plugging along. Right now, we have, I think, 30 people who have been a part of either groups or one-on-one, and we have two more groups coming up. One tomorrow. And one, I think, on Monday or Tuesday, I forget, that's targeting women. Much thanks to Kat and Kira for leading these sessions and for administering everything. I got a quick preview of Kira's presentation. It's looking good, but we have decided to move the presentation from August to, from this month to November. For a couple of reasons. We feel like, number one, that 30, even though it's better compared to the numbers we've had for needs assessments post-pandemic, which have not been great, it's still very low for such a very big population. So we're going to just keep on trying to get well past 30. I mean, Kira and I had these great grand visions of like, oh my God, we're going to get over 50 easily, you know? It's because of the numbers, but we haven't been achieving that. Perhaps there's just been some sort of an exhaustion with this population as far as always doing this. But we did even up our incentive amount, so we thought like, okay, well, we're offering a pretty good incentive, but it's still not really landing in the way that we thought. Still, 30 is nothing to sneeze at, but we would love 50. So we continue, by we I mean Kat and Kira, continue to do outreach to different agencies, and we're hoping to get some more folks from Golden Compass, the two sets of groups that will be assessed. Are coming from Vince at the foundation, and certainly Derek has been incredibly helpful, perhaps our prime mover when it comes to getting folks in the door. But there's still just so much more. There's a lot more than 30 people who fall within this demographic. So if any of you are in contact with any kind of groups or even individuals who would be appropriate for this, please send them Karen Katz way. So they can, I mean, they can do this over the phone if need be. It doesn't need to be in an in-person group setting. It can be over the phone as well. And they'll still get an incentive, $50 worth of gift card. Very nice. I would like that. Help us if you can. But anyway, so you won't see that this month. You'll be seeing that in November so that we can hopefully have more than 30 folks. TJ, you had a question about this?
Yeah, do you have a flyer or anything that we can share with people?
We do. Kat, if you can send that along to Mr. Lee Miyake, that would be
Yes,
great.
absolutely.
Actually, just send it to the group if you don't mind. Just send it to all the community engagement folks. It's good to just have a refresh. I'm sure Derek's sick of getting this, but send it to Derek too. All right, any questions about where we're at with the new assessment and its move to November? All right, for the COLA, I think what's a suggestion from this group, Kat, correct me if I'm. Oh, I'm sorry. Kat, did you have anything to add to the need assessment since you're actually working on it?
I
All
didn't. I think you covered everything.
right, thanks. And then with the COLA, I think it was this group that suggested this particular target population. I was not at the meeting where it was suggested, which are immigrants. Obviously, right now, that is a population that is targeted in many ways. And so the feeling that we had on staff, and also I think in the group, again, I wasn't here for this group discussion, is that we don't necessarily want to put folks who have an immigrant status, whether documented or not, doesn't matter. Like in any kind of, I mean, it doesn't seem to matter to the administration either. Oh, recording, sorry. But we don't want to put people in an awkward situation where they feel like they have to even come forward. Right now, it's such a time of stigmatization and fear and like genuinely understandable paranoia that we are doing a COLA, this COLA, in an unusual way. We've done it before. We've done these kinds of COLAs before, but we're going to be talking to the providers of these services instead. We'll be talking directly, hopefully working directly with some of Marco's colleagues and staff over at Mission Neighborhood Health Center, who can provide a nice overview of the experiences of their clients who fall within this category. Kira's in process right now as far as trying to set that up or even just to have the conversation about how this will look. If Marco does feel like, no, you can definitely talk to the clients directly, that we can handle that, then that's the direction we'll go. But our sense is that it might be better to talk to the direct service providers in this particular situation, because we want good information. We certainly don't want people to feel any sort of way. All right, so that's our COLA. That is, it's only in its very nascent stages. My understanding is that we have yet to approve this as a COLA target. That doesn't mean we're not working on it right now. We're assuming that the interest from this group is going to remain, but we haven't achieved quorum to actually approve it. I'll get to this question in just a moment, or comments from Nikos. Thank you, Nikos. So I think what we'll do is approve it at steering, where hopefully we will have quorum there, because it does need to be approved. Doesn't need to go to a COLA doesn't need to go to the full council. It can be approved by whichever committee either holds it, which is this committee, or the managing committee of all committees steering. So since we don't have quorum today, let's just hope we have quorum for steering so we can actually approve this. Nikos, in your comment, were you referring to clients of the need assessment or clients or folks who are experiencing who would be, I guess, covered under the discussion of the COLA? So the need assessment was 65 and older, and the COLA was immigrants.
Oh, I combined those in my mind.
Oh, 65 plus immigrants. Okay. 65 plus still can fall under our needs assessment. Absolutely. And if Marco and Kira decide that this is something that we can actually talk to people directly about, then I'll ask Kira, or maybe Kat, you can ask Kira to reach out to Nikos. But right now we are more provider focused, just for safety concerns. But yes, Nikos, if you know anyone who's 65 and over, send them our way. You'll be getting something from Kat that will give the details, including the incentivization. So the more the merrier on our needs assessment, for sure. Even though it is a qualitative set of data rather than quantitative, it's still the more numbers, the better. Also makes the responses, the response array richer. Okay, thank you for that, Nikos. Any questions or thoughts on the COLA? And Kat, do you have anything you'd like to add?
No,
Got it?
you've done a good job.
I did well? Okay, good. All right. Well, if there's no questions, thank you. I feel like where's Kira? I guess I have to talk. Fortunately, they prepped me well because we had a meeting literally this afternoon. So I feel like I'm an expert on this. All right. So if there's nothing else, then we've reached the end of our meeting. Hopefully, we'll achieve quorum one of these days. My understanding was last month we also didn't achieve quorum. But hey, summer impacts people in different ways, right? Hope you all have a good rest of your afternoon, and I will see you at our whatever next meeting I see you at.